Mini episode 383 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
30 seconds.
In front of all these people, you're going to pull out a gun and you're going to shoot an unarmed man.
20 seconds.
So what are you going to do?
10.
Welcome to the FDH Lounge and the Justified episode recap.
It was justified.
With your original dignitaries.
Fire in the hole!
Rick Morris and Jason Jones.
You got ice cold water running through your veins.
Breaking down each Justified episode the moment they've concluded.
Did you take a peek inside the soul of Raymond Newton?
I'm just gonna let that old dog lie.
Real-time reactions. Next level analysis.
You seem to be harboring a bit of hostility there, brother.
So I've been told.
And now, your dignitaries.
Well, I believe we can take her from here.
Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 384. We are here today to break down, in real time, as it has just ended, episode 5.6 of Justified. We are coming off of that epic resetter from last week, shot all to hell. It was the one that was essentially the climax to the first half of this season, setting the pieces on the board for the second half of the season. Some surprises tonight, some changes in direction. For my money, again, not nearly as exciting as what we saw last week, but that's okay because, again, you got to pick your spots. Not every episode can be epic like last week's one was. This is one that, again, I felt like episodes one and two earlier in the season, to me, served a purpose. I will be very curious to get the opinion of my man, Jay Jones. Jason, what did you think of the episode tonight? Some different things happening here, some twists, particularly towards the end. What were your thoughts?
Initially, through the first, 20 minutes, I felt like there was no way we were going to live up to last week's episode. But I did get to a point where I was like, wow, this is really almost pedestrian. And then a few things happened. And then there's a moment where you see Boyd standing, essentially, not literally, shoulder to shoulder with Daryl Crowe, and then the light turns on. And I don't know about you, but for me, in that moment, I think it's almost like two storylines converged and created a bigger, big bad, if you will, because at this point, before that union there, where revenge had to be taken, it almost felt like Boyd was headed down a path where he was going to bite off more than he could chew. And if I'm to interpret that properly, if the Crowder gang element or crime element is going to join forces with the Crowders, we could be headed down a conclusion that is epic.
Well, they certainly found a way to differentiate this season from season three, which we've talked about previously, the whole thing of Boyd versus Robert Quarles and the invading force from the outside. But here's a very interesting thing as well, Jason, and I don't know if this crossed your mind the way that it crossed my mind, but what Boyd did with Daryl Crowe at the end, while it was kind of unexpected, I really didn't see that coming because it sort of reset my expectations for the rest of the year, because I thought that they were going to continue to be battling Boyd while he was also battling Johnny. It's not entirely unprecedented. We forget. But Wynn Duffy, for all of season three, was the sidekick to Robert Quarles. That made him, to the extent that he was in Boyd's orbit, Boyd's adversary as well. When Wynn Duffy soured on Quarles towards the end of the season, what started as a marriage of convenience to bring in Robert Quarles, bring him to Theo Tone and collect the bounty on him, has solidified, we have seen, into an actual alliance between the two. You see Boyd and you see Wynn now, and they are full-fledged crime brothers, so to speak. So not to say that it's necessarily going to go in that direction, and sometimes if you think about casting It's kind of a bummer because that is kind of a spoiler. It's hard to imagine Michael Rapaport being back on the show for another season. This tends to happen in one season arcs. But it is easy to think about Boyd being joined up with the Crows for a good long period of time because, again, the Duffy thing is a real precedent.
Yeah. I'll be honest, this entire episode I wasn't really thinking much about Wynn Duffy and the implications there, but you are hitting on something that's interesting, to say the least. I even now, in this moment, I don't think Michael Rapaport as Daryl Crow lasts much longer this season, unless we're building to something really, really big to close out the series, which could potentially happen. And let's also not forget that there's dysfunction on both sides, so it's not like this is an ironclad safe bet for either party. But I think that's one of the clear details that we will want to look forward to is exactly where this season ends and what that means for the next season.
Yeah, we're going to have to contemplate that. And again, one of the thoughts that I had coming into this week, something that had kind of come to me thematically leading up to this episode, coming off of the big mammoth episode 5.5 from a week ago, and I think we certainly have some more thoughts we want to get to on 5.5, the implications and what the Justified fan base has had to say about that. But just in terms of where we were coming out of that, I was kind of thinking during the week here a little bit along the lines of the families that are going to survive the tension within, and that's going to have a lot to say how they come out of this season. It's very obvious with the Crowders. You have Johnny and you have Boyd. You have the two wings of that family there. And the Crowders, again, they look like they're going to be at odds pretty much, really, for as long as Johnny's still alive. Let's put it that way. Because, again, it's kind of a bummer to kind of know more than you should. But at this point, we know that Boyd is going to be around until the end in some form or fashion. Boyd is never going to be in such grave danger that, you know, they're going to kill him off. So there's that. There's the tension in the Crow family. You have Danny Crow going rogue here at various points of time. Dewey is always kind of a wild card as far as what's going to happen because he's such a lovable, blithering idiot. And then tension in what I would call the Mullen family, for lack of a better term, because really, Raylan is, as so many people have said, I mean, the de facto son. Art is a full-fledged father figure for Raylan, as Arlo never was. Although it's an interesting thing here, you look at Art in the cold open tonight punching out Raylan, almost kind of a flashback to Arlo abusing him growing up. This was a, you know, to borrow the term for the series, a justifiable punch from Art. Art feels betrayed. Raylan did what he had to do. You and I have agreed on this, but, the sign of a real man is to do what you got to do and take your lumps, which Raylan looks like he's prepared to do. But you've got the Art / Raylan family. You've got the Crowders. You've got the Crows. And I think navigating the tensions and the hostilities within the families, that's going to have a lot to say about how this season shakes out, who comes out on top, and who's going to be looking up at the lights for a three count, as they say in pro wrestling.
Yeah. With this three-way dynamic you're talking about, I still come back to the idea that there's dysfunction across the board with the... Now, granted, the Raylan-Art situation may be just as simple as Raylan knows that he crossed the line and he's willing to do his penance for Art to make up for it or at least make that attempt. And maybe that all comes out in the wash just fine. But the I don't think that Boyd's situation killing cousin Johnny is going to be seamless. I think there's got to be some sort of a fallout from that, and then we still haven't resolved the Baptiste thing. So although they are all equal parts of what it feels like we're the journey we're taking, I think that the Art Raylan thing is more likely to fix itself pleasantly than the other two.
Yeah, I think so, because again, for all that we talk about with this show and all of the psychological underpinnings of Raylan Givens and about how, as you and I have agreed, He's not an anti-hero, but he's a flawed hero. He's a troubled hero. And Art is pretty straightforwardly a white hat kind of a guy. You know, so Raylan, relative to Boyd, relative to Johnny, relative to the Crows, is well-adjusted. Art and Raylan are de facto the two most adjusted people, well-adjusted, that we're talking about here. So that's most likely to resolve itself in some kind of a way. The other folks here, yeah, not so much. And again, you and I had discussed this previously in terms of Ava. Is she possibly the fulcrum going forward here between Johnny and Boyd? There was little to nothing about Johnny on tonight's episode, on one that was more Ava-heavy than anything we've seen thus far this year, as Ava gets shipped off to the Kentucky State Women's Prison and has to start dealing with things there. But everything from the protection that Boyd lined up for her, that went wrong, and I've been getting a general vibe that Ava is going to really, really, really toughen up behind bars, and that she may come out of this like really, really hardcore by the time it's all said and done. She's not going to come out of this the same way. It's not going to be, okay, I come out of this, and okay, I'll go back to just, you know, whatever kind of crime sidekick stuff we're doing, Boyd. This is something that's going to change her, and it looks like not in a scared straight direction. It looks like in a super hardened criminal direction. And does that maybe point her towards Johnny? Is Johnny in any way going to be able to exploit what might be tensions rising from, you know, Ava having a harder time in prison, tensions between Ava and Boyd?
You know, I may be absolutely incorrect with what I'm about to say a couple weeks from now, and maybe this is exactly what the writers want. But I get the feeling right now, based on what we just watched, that I don't think Johnny's going to be around that long, regardless of how it goes down. I don't think he's going to be a relevant figure, even much less a living figure, long enough for Ava to choose sides. Now, like I said, I could be completely wrong on that. But if I am, then sure, that absolutely opens the door for all kinds of fallout that could go either way. The question is, any amount of time that Ava's going to be locked up, however long that is that enough time for Johnny to, one, stay alive, and two, do enough to present himself as at least on the same playing field with Boyd if there is to be a fiscal future involved. I will say one thing to your point, though, and this is maybe me showing my age a little bit as a fan of everything 1990s. Her using that razor to cut her own hair as opposed to, say, taking out vengeance was very reminiscent of the imagery from a terrible movie called G.I. Jane, where the character is surrounded by men trying to become the first female Navy SEAL, and basically makes the decision that from this point on, you know, no more games, and she cuts all her hair off. So there was a little imagery there that kind of suggested to me maybe we are approaching that turning point where Ava is no longer the pretty eye candy attached to the local crime lord, but maybe Ava is taking a turn to being her own, let's say, power player, if you will.
That's very interesting because, again, I wasn't thinking G.I. Jane specifically, but I got a little bit of the vibe that you did, that was a turning point of Ava hardening there and becoming more of this kind of figure. So you and I seem to be going down a little bit of the same path in terms of how we looked at it and what the potential implications are for Ava. And, again, she really dealt with a lot in this episode, including being turned on by her own quote-unquote protector in prison, who had a higher loyalty to hers and her brother's white power perspective, shall we say, their kind of twisted hatreds, higher loyalty to that than to living up to the financial agreement that they had made to protect Ava. I was not 100% clear on this, and occasionally we have to admit these things because we are reviewing this afterwards in real time. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that they meant Boyd's dealings with Limehouse as far as him allegedly being a race traitor. Did you catch anything specific in terms of what the reference was? And B, if not, do you think it might be Limehouse that they're talking about?
Well, now that you say that, I hope it is. Because a part of me, as we go through the seasons, you know, you have certain big characters that die or just go away for the reasons that they're no longer feasible. And you think of the Bennett family specifically. However, Limehouse is not dead, and you got to think that he's not hiding. So I'd like to see him come back in some capacity. But I was just under the impression that from the reference that Boyd is allowing, you know, quote, coloreds into his church.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe it was just literally and simplistically relating back to the idea that when Boyd knew this fella, that he was a very staunch skinhead racist type, and the fact that he's even, you know, willing to do business with people that aren't, let's just say, Aryan, maybe tick those people off. I actually had not thought it through enough to even consider Limehouse. But now that you say that, he did do some dealings with Limehouse and basically turned his back on this whole religious or extreme, you know, pro-white militant mentality that I'm sure he picked up at some point doing time.
Well, that's an excellent point. I haven't considered Boyd's former congregation as part of the issue here. And to clarify, yes, that when you said coloreds, you were, of course, making a direct quote from there, I believe. That was not your nomenclature, certainly, but
no.
I will say...
let's just say there's plenty of things that are said on this show that are not anything that you or I would actually say in public or private conversations.
Yeah, precisely. But it's funny because you go back to that flock, the poor folks who ended up being slaughtered by Bo Crowder, who met with an ill fortune there, and one of the guys was black, now that you mention it, because one of my favorite Justified scenes ever, and I think it's one of the only ones you can find on YouTube, that's the one where Raylan goes to the thing when they're in the woods there. He wants to talk to Boyd about something. Boyd ropes him into delivering some kind of prayer before the meal, and Raylan manages to work into the prayer about please forgive Boyd for blowing up a black church and for spraying that guy's brains on the windshield. That was one of the all-time classic scenes from early Justified. But the whole thing between Boyd and the white supremacists, again, on second viewing here in real time, silently, I'm catching a few things as we're talking here. I picked up on a lot of the white power imagery that was in that guy's shop when they met early on that I missed the first time around. So, yeah, that's you can understand where the writing is going. Mm-hmm.
The funny thing about that is, and this is probably just, you know, 10 different people watching the same thing see it 10 different ways. And the funny thing is, not that I was foreshadowing anything, but when he walked in there and they're talking, you see the tattoos, and then at one point the camera catches over the big guy's shoulder, what I believe to be some sort of Nazi flag that's more than just a swastika. We're talking like, you know, actual stuff, like maybe even World War II memorabilia type stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, Boyd better be damn sure he knows what this relationship is, because I got a bad feeling that they don't feel the same, or they don't feel positively equal to one another in this moment, because it just felt, and it almost seemed like Boyd had just a sense at the very beginning of that conversation that maybe he's outmatched here because of the imagery, or maybe it was just their intention to show us that Boyd is no longer the person he was when he met that guy. But I definitely got a weird feeling about Boyd trying to employ protection for Ava with someone in a previous life while they're still there, and it was very much previous to Boyd, and that Boyd is no longer that person. So it's kind of cool that you didn't necessarily get the heebie-jeebies from it, but I sure did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, too, though, and I mean – maybe this is one of these TMI situations here. Maybe I'm going to say something that I shouldn't on air, but I mean, notwithstanding the fact that I wouldn't be caught dead, obviously, as part of the Aryans in real life, if I had a very close friend slash family member slash whatever going to the can, would I look to possibly line up any kind of deals with them to kind of help keep them safe, whatever? I absolutely would, because prison is a horrible, horrible place. And by the way, I'm picking up on more of that from watching The Shield. More about that a little bit later, as I have to work in my weekly Walton Goggins crossover to the program here. But this is one of these things where Boyd making a deal with them, you know, yeah, I'm probably admitting something that the rest of America wouldn't, but I would deal with the devil to protect, you know, in that form, the Aryan Nation or whoever, if I had somebody behind bars that, you know, might be killed otherwise. So, you know, that is interesting about Boyd going back to a former life, as you'd indicated. When you talk about the way that the different perspectives shake out as far as looking at this, I want to go back to 5.5 a week ago because it was so absolutely epic. And everything that we had to say about this, it was striking to me that amidst an almost unanimous chorus of praise that I said would be coming, that I predicted would be coming, and that just about everyone would see it that way, a little bit shocked that the one that really didn't join us in this, Alan Sepinwall from HitFix, who when he was at the Star Ledger, almost, as I've indicated before, almost really kind of invented the modern recap culture. Shows like this, columns like the ones that are written about shows afterwards, largely stem from when he was writing the Sopranos reviews back in the day and getting a lot of feedback and making it kind of a back and forth kind of a thing with the public. He thought it was a little bit too chaotic, that they were trying to do too much, that it was a little bit too ambitious, and that it was maybe a little bit too almost kind of trying to be artistic with all the things that they were throwing into it. And I'm paraphrasing what he was saying. So I thought it was really, really kind of striking that of all the voices that were out there, I might have thought maybe the hipsters at AV Club, who I generally like for their Justified coverage, but if anybody was going to ding it, maybe give it a B-plus instead of an A, that it would be them. But no, they gave it an A. Interesting that Sepinwall thought they were trying to be a little bit too ambitious last week with it. That's sort of like a classic critic's perspective, I guess. And I don't mean to say that in a slamming kind of a way, but that is something like what you'd expect a critic to say.
Well, I'm going to say something that may not be popular amongst the critical community.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you'll engage conversations, whether they're with a professional or just another person that enjoys, you know, consuming television, movies, whatever. And a lot of times they will describe themselves as being, you know, a little bit more into it than your average person, or go as far as to say that they're a snob or an elitist about these types of things. And it's my opinion that, in general, a lot of times you start off just watching something because you like it. Then you start picking things up and start noticing, learning new details to the craft and so on. And you go so far away from just what you get out of it, and you spend so much time nitpicking and going through with a fine-tooth comb that you go so far back around that you're back before the starting point again. And I'm not suggesting that anyone in particular is doing that, but it seems to me if you watch that episode, if you're so in tune to looking at the details and saying, was this too much, or were they trying to do too much, or was it artsy, or whatever it was that you referenced, I think as an artist, You sometimes you get too close, you got to step back. And the fact of the matter is, if you let go of all the details and trying to be too critical, that episode was one of the best episodes of television, period, that I've seen in a very long time. And now if you want to nitpick that, that's fine. But at the end of the day, it was a phenomenal episode. It didn't detract from anything that they're trying to do storyline-wise. And I think to take any shot on it other than to say that it was superb, you're trying too hard to be too critical.
Yeah, and I think that really is true in this case because, again, I respect the heck out of Alan Sepinwall. I've really, really enjoyed his book that he had written about the modern era of television. I've learned a lot from that as a writer. His book, The Revolution Was Televised, The Cops, Crooks, Slingers and Slayers Who Changed TV Drama Forever. Yeah, but again, I couldn't disagree with him more about last week. And I, again, I'm paraphrasing, and I'm using the word arty in there that he may not have used in his review. But in terms of trying to do too much, I will say that he felt like they were trying to cram too much into one episode and to be a little bit too cute with it. But just about the rest of the world did agree with us with what we were saying in real time, that it was one of the great episodes of the season. My as promised, Walton Goggins crossover for the week here from The Shield. I am up to season 6 of The Shield inside of 3 weeks, which is truly unbelievable. But really enjoying it. It's funny on there. I will note how his character, they will from time to time bring up stuff about his teeth as well. So that those gleaming, pearly white teeth get remarked on that show as well. There actually was a criminal one time who sarcastically referred to him as teeth. But there was another moment as well, I will tell you, from a Huffington Post TV review that he did in 2007. It was an interview that he did when they were talking about, because in the last seasons in 07 and 08, his character had the very, very big critical arc to it there. And he was critiquing the show and talking about it, and he said something about it that, again, I really felt like it applies to Justified as well, because he talked about it and he said, you know, I really feel like when people are watching our show that hopefully they feel like they're tuning into the best little independent film on TV every week. And it's something where, again, I at this point, I can't recommend The Shield more highly, Jason, to you and anybody else that hasn't seen it, because it is another one of these great character-driven things. Everything with the thickness and the density of these characters and the way they bounce off of one another. But really, that applies to Justified, doesn't it? I mean, independent films we tend to think of maybe as a little bit pretentious, fairly or unfairly. But aside from that, with the character and the level of detail and everything else, what Goggins said about The Shield, I felt like it applied so strongly to Justified that I wanted to mention it to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you this, as far as any of the listeners are curious about my interest in the show and your frequent mention of it, Goggins and Chiklis is enough for me to be interested. And like most people, I think you kind of have your DVR like set for the seasons. So many shows you got to get through. And to be honest, I'm just kind of waiting for probably Justified to end and get into that pre-summer lull where there's really not a lot going on. And I, too, will try to binge watch it. But let me just mention real quick, and I had to look it up to make sure, Detective Kevin Hyatt, who is played by one of my favorites, and I don't say that because he's a great actor. I just like the stuff that he's done. Alex O'Loughlin, who is also the lead character in one of my, I hesitate to say publicly, guilty pleasures, Hawaii Five-O. So there's every week you seem to say something about The Shield and how it relates to Justified and why they are of a similar vein. And I guess at this point I'm saying that this, you're preaching to the choir, because every single week there's a new development that makes me say, yep, that one's next.
I can't even believe you mentioned that part and that character, because I think he gets introduced literally in the next episode that I watch. I think that guy comes in the third episode.
Only on for one season.
Yeah, season 6. And I just got through episode 2 earlier today. So, yeah, that earlier tonight, actually, as I've been watching it predominantly here in the evening hours. But I will say the other thing I wanted to mention as well before we get to kind of going full circle on tonight's show and any other points we wanted to make, an interesting amalgam, Jason, at Buddy TV, which is a great site for pop culture enthusiasts and those who are fans of shows like this. You can do the whole which character are you personality quiz for the different shows. I am apparently Shane off of The Shield, which is Walton Goggins' character. I am apparently Art Mullen from Justified, which I think for anybody who knows me in the FDH and the 21st Century Media Alliance can probably see that. I'm also apparently Skyler White from Breaking Bad. I really disagreed with that one. No, I don't think I am either. I know what you hate Skyler, so I knew that would break your heart. Somehow I managed to be all of these different characters.
Because I haven't seen The Shield yet, I can't really speak to Goggins' character there, Shane.
I'm not Shane. I can tell you I'm not Shane. For better and for worse,
but
I'm not Shane.
The Art Mullins thing isn't bad. Now, the funny thing is here...
I am Art-like.
our personal, if we should draw parallels with, you know, the entire FDH family, the problem is no one else matches up to anybody else. If Rick is Art, and we accept that, that's fine. But there is no Raylan, and there is no Boyd, and there is no Johnny or Devil or Ava. So although I absolutely agree with the Art one, I think that's where that parallel kind of dies off. And Skyler White is absolutely absurd. We should go hunt down the people that put that quiz together and really strap them to a chair and do something harmful, because that's terrible.
Yeah. I don't know who I was expecting out of that. Hank or Gomi, maybe. But, you know, as far as
Hank.
It goes with the Shield. Yeah,
Hank,
maybe.
Yeah, the it's hard to pin anyone to any parallel with Breaking Bad because it's so different.
It is. It is way out there. I will say, too, for anybody that's listening that is fans of the Shield and knows the characters, I was expecting that I would have been the Dutch man. I was not expecting that I was going to be Shane. But I knew that when I was it came up and I saw Walt Goggins' picture. I actually saved the graphics. You can do, like, you know, the right copy and a left copy or left click to paste. I actually did that just to save these things here in a file of the three different characters that I matched up as. But as far as it goes with Walt Goggins and his character on Justified, again, a fascinating arc now through the rest of the season. We saw the international criminals on here tonight. We've seen the Canadians previously. Now we see a gentleman from south of the border. We see an Asian gentleman on there tonight. So you talked about it earlier that the universe is getting bigger with the show here. We are now legitimately seeing big-time criminal characters outside of Kentucky. And it's one of these things where you wonder going into this season and in the next season, how are they going to do the tie to put Raylan and Boyd in the same storyline here? And now it's getting to be pretty easy to see because you already had Wade Messer as the informant. Boyd was already deemed big enough for the marshals to put somebody in there. Boyd is going to be such a big-time criminal through the remainder of this series, not just this season, but this series. That's going to keep him and Raylan on that arc to the final showdown probably at the end of next year.
You know, the sad thing is as our universe expands, it almost is starting to feel like it's going to be the United States Marshals Service versus, and whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the first conclusion to draw is that, you know, Boyd has to win ultimately or the series is over. So between the Boyd and Johnny thing, Boyd wins out unless Johnny somehow comes on board, and I don't see that happening. So then all of the other interests that are in play right now almost have to fall in line with either the Crowder crime element or the U.S. Marshals. And that's really putting it simple, that's really the only way I see that whole thing panning out right now. But clearly the universe is getting bigger. And it seems like instead of it being this big cluster bomb we were thinking of a few weeks ago, that maybe it actually works itself out to become a nice, concise two-party race, so to speak.
Yeah, and that would be one of the biggest swerves of all, is that if it ends up being sort of a more coherent narrative than it looked a couple of weeks ago when it was looking like there were all these different things coming into play. But we still continue to see some new ones coming in, even again as of tonight. The whole thing with Ava in there in prison and the way that storyline is kind of taking on a life of its own. The thing with Art and with Raylan, which is this sort of buried hostility that is going to kind of come out from time to time through the remainder of the season, if not the series. So we got that coming up as well. And what's very interesting to me, we talked about it thematically coming off of last week. It felt like the end of the first half of the season. We saw a little bit earlier here tonight that there is apparently not going to be, for whatever reason, a new episode next week. I didn't see if maybe that's when they're debuting the Americans' new season in the time slot, but they were advertising it in 2 weeks. So we will next be convening for our new recap 2 weeks from tonight. Maybe they should have started the season a week later. Because I can't help but think if they would have left off like after last week, boy, that's a real natural break there. It's way more of a natural break, I think, than after tonight, Jason.
Well, absolutely. And just as a fellow TV viewer, and ironically someone who absolutely enjoys the Olympics and hoping that it's not because of that, I'm really getting tired of all my shows going on a hiatus, and I don't care what the reason is. Just stop it. One other quick little side note for anyone who's checking this out to see if they'd be interested in Justified and trying to play some of these characters. The Asian gentleman you mentioned who's played by the character is Yoon, Y-O-O-N, is actually the guy most known for being the Asian sort of second-in-command from Heroes.
Oh,
that
okay.
jumped out at me almost right away. He played Ando in Heroes, which was just interesting. They are pulling characters, and you made this, you mentioned this long before we ever did this show, that the one of the beautiful things about Justified is they find a way to bring people in that if you said Patton Oswalt, you're going to say, no way, not happening. And they find a way to work it out. Will Sasso and others. They just do such a phenomenal job with casting.
It is truly amazing. And again, with some of the ones like you mentioned there, and in putting Mike O'Malley as Nicky Augustine, the big bad for last season, it's almost like they're challenging themselves in an absurd kind of a way just to see if they can pull it off. And time after time after time, they do. I would like to draw the analogy there, once again, to these recap shows here, Jason. I would like to think time after time this year, we have been up to the challenge of reviewing this masterpiece of a show, which I consider to be the best current drama on TV. I know you hold it in equally high esteem. A pleasure, as always, my man. This was a lot of fun. We're not going to get to do this next week because I guess there's no new episode, but 2 weeks from now, same bad place, same bad channel, my friend.
Absolutely. Maybe one day when they rehash how great this show was, they'll rehash how great this show was.
I'm sure they will. Thanks very much.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.